Welcome to the Construction Brothers Podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Campbell, and with me, like he is every week, my brother, Eddie Campbell.
What just happened?
Well, this week, what is holding you back? Well, apparently nothing's holding you back. What happened?
Dude,
we have a thing that we do, and then you changed.
I'm sorry. I just felt like mixing it up this week. It worked out.
How could you?
Your face was priceless.
What is going on? That was all that my face should have said, because that was what was going on internally.
You look so shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's like I just screamed in your face. All right.
I like how you almost point at me. I mean, really, like you wind your right hand up in the air like you're going to point at me. Like, I don't know how to say my name.
Well, I'm just trying to cue you because you need help like that sometimes.
I'm in the room with you, though, so that's not a problem, usually.
Yeah, well, moving right along. So this week is kind of a special one because we launched the podcast on September 23rd last year. And I know you're wondering, how does that work? That's not the way time works, Tyler. Well, we switched up the release date on the episode. That's why. And then I think it was like a leap year or something like that. Anyway, Austin explained it. He understands. But it's been a year, man. Full on year.
And that's absolutely mind blowing to me.
Isn't it, though?
We've stuck with this thing 1 year.
That's the mind-blowing part. Yeah, we've stuck with it for a year.
You know what I think's hilarious is I've been with ABSI in January 16 years. And my anniversary, my work anniversary, comes and goes every year. And it's kind of like, meh, whatever.
Yeah. Podcast anniversary, on the other hand.
Well, yeah, on LinkedIn, everybody's like, happy work anniversary. I'm like, oh, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Man, it's been a fun year. You know, we talked to some incredible people. I kind of want to just open up the bag a little bit. You know, like, what do you feel like you've learned this year?
I've learned that I am not much of a radio presence. That I know absolutely nothing about actually doing this well.
It's both of us. Yeah.
I have learned that there are a lot of people out there with enough drive time and nothing better to do that they will listen to us and our shenanigans.
Yeah, what are you doing? That's surprising.
Why are you even...
Yeah, and somebody messaged me the other day and said, man, it's just great for windshield time. And I'm just like, what? But
like better than staring at the bugs that are hitting them? Or
yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean, I guess we're entertaining in some form or fashion. I don't get it, but okay.
Really, what I've learned is how small we are in this big industry. We knew it was a big industry.
That was really philosophical of you. I'm so proud.
Ah, well, thanks for that, Ty.
Well,
so seldom do you actually encourage me, but there's this funny and sinking feeling I have in the back of my mind and heart that that was an actual sleight of hand and did not mean anything encouraging.
What did I say? I can't remember. Anyway.
Moving on, I feel like I have learned that this is an industry filled with very smart people, an industry filled with people that are doing things that I didn't even know about. I had no idea how much was out there. And this has helped like open that up. I feel like we just peeled it back and kind of like peered out there and went, oh man, outer space is big.
Yeah, it is.
Which is met with kind of duh.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still my realization and, you know, don't make fun of me for it.
It's okay. Well,
I asked. You asked. What about you, Tyler?
The answer was kind of, you know, it is what it is. For me.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. I'm only here to encourage you. So for me, I guess I will kind of piggyback on that. Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting to see how small we are in the industry and realize how many people are out there doing amazing things every single day. And I love that we just get to sit down every single week and talk with an interesting person. I feel so honored that we've had the chance to sit down with these people that we have. And I mean, from, you know, Eric Reinhold to, you know, Marion Raphael, that's amazing. And like, you know, Ed Anderson and Jordan Laver over at Trimble. It's just... And that's just naming a few of them. And I don't want to leave out anybody. And I'm sorry if I'm leaving people out.
You are leaving people out.
I'm so sorry.
You left out Roy.
Roy Underhill, for crying out loud.
You left out Roy.
So
you left out Barbie.
I left out Barbie. My gosh. I mean, it's like there are so many cool things that we've been able to do this year as a result of just opening up the creativity box and just saying, hey, you know, what can we do? What can we do for the industry? What can we talk about? And apparently we can talk about quite a lot. We're pretty good at that. So
you left out Sam.
I need you to shut up. That's what I need you to do right now, because you're going to make me feel bad and I do not want to leave anybody out. So I'm sorry if I didn't mention your
name.
It's
working. I am doing the thing that I want to do.
The script really flipped on me there.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Okay. I went from raking you over the coals, and right when I least expected it, I'm laying in the coals and you're dumping coals on me. Anyway,
our mission here at Construction Brothers is ideas and encouragement.
How many times do we say that every single week?
Unless, of course, it is between Tyler and I. And then it is not encouragement. It's actually ripping on each other and saying like stupid movie quotes or something. Like that's what the Construction Brothers is about. So
Victor says what?
Wayne's World quote. See? I told you. Dumb movie quotes. Dumb movie quotes.
Oh, geez.
All right. Well, all right. What about Nate Clark, man?
All right. Well, yeah. So you actually dug him up. So I'm going to flip the script back on you, Eddie. What about Nate Clark, man?
Nate Clark wrote a very cool LinkedIn article. It's okay. About the psychology kind of behind making decisions or trying to land on what we use in the realms of tech. Mm-hmm. And so pretty cool. I had a little, you know, pre-interview chat with him, liked the way it was going. And I don't think that the episode today disappoints. I think it was fun to hear some of the analogies that he will draw for us today and kind of help us understand like, well, here's why this is a struggle. And it's mainly about like, it is about decision-making. Here's why it's a struggle to make decisions. And it's because they're not always easy. It's because you've got a lot of options. It's because those options are not always good options. They're not always bad options. They're not always neutral options. Mm-hmm. But they're all things that you do have to do something with.
Yeah. Kind of towards the end, you know, we ended up kind of steering into something that struck a chord with me. And that was, you know, again, that decision-making process. And I started thinking about Zoom and Google. You know, we had adopted Zoom as our main voice line here at the office.
Yep.
And then you came to me, was it yesterday? And you were like, hey, I think Google may have a really good offering here. And it also integrates with Gmail, which we use, and, you know, all the other G Suite offerings. And so now it's just like, oh gosh, do we have to change again? You know, there's always something out there that's going to catch your eye and draw you in. And so it just, I don't know. It struck a chord with me. I'm like, wow, you know, nobody is immune to this. This is difficult as a business owner, as a leader in any capacity. This is a difficult place to make decisions in because it's ever changing.
Well, and we're a smaller scale company. And I always say that allows us to be agile. Like I like to think of us as like this high functioning team, right? Mm-hmm. But that makes us agile to a fault because we can make a bunch of decisions and they can happen very fast and they're not always good decisions.
What's the phrase? Buzz like a boomerang and sting like a Cheeto.
I think that you were trying to use a boomer phrase as a millennial and you don't speak boomer. There's always this opportunity to go and make decisions. And as a small business, you can make them to a fault.
Yeah.
You can make them very fast. And so large businesses are usually built around making some insulation there for those decisions and making them move a little slower. Mm-hmm. But there's a fault there too.
And you get the racehorse effect, which we'll talk about later.
That's right.
Yeah.
So listen up. Listen up to the whole psychology behind how you get to a decision point and why, you know, it's important to understand something like the term cognitive dissonance, which made us sound very heady.
Ooh, interesting.
Nate went to school to be an actuarial scientist, which I wanted him to drop that. He didn't. But like, this is the study and observation of like risk, right? This is okay. statistics yeah. behind risk.
Yeah.
And so when he mentions just in passing in the episode, like talking about being able to make decisions based on mitigating risk and mm-hmm. like that's kind of the bend.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're not talking to a psychology major turned construction guy.
Yeah.
Like this guy was, went to school to be an actuary. And so yeah. like he knows how to put together the numbers to mitigate the risk. And so I don't know, the whole psychology of decision-making came out of that.
Yeah. We get to just talk to so many awesome people out there right now. And there's so many of you, and thank you so much for being out there and listening to us for this past year or so. Before we get going though, if you have any comments or anything like that on the episode, make sure you text us. It's 478-221-7009. Eddie, what's that number again? It was 478-221-7009. Is that it? Is that it?
You misspoke.
Is that it? Is it?
So I didn't know what it was. But if I look it up in my phone, I can find it because I get these random texts, these random encouraging texts from this number that is a 478 number.
It's a 478 number? Is it a 478-221-7009?
That's the one. Is what it? Was our last quote? There are no bad teams, only bad leaders by Jocko Willink.
Mm.
Hope to God we're not in a bad team right now. That's all I got to say about that. So.
All right, guys. Well, we'll stop boring you. Let's get right into our conversation with Nate Clark.
Nate, thanks for joining us today. Why don't you tell us who you are and what you do?
My name is Nate Clark, and I'm a key account manager at Fawn. As key account manager, I assist construction companies that are navigating digital transformation to really make sure that they find the right fit. And diving a little bit more into Fawn, the way I like to describe Fawn is a construction management app that lets everyone focus on what they're good at. And what I mean by that is, you know, guys in the field get to do what they love. They get to play with souped up versions of their, pretty much their childhood toys. You know, mini construction sets become power tools, AC cars become bulldozers, or they're using a craft to build the built environment around us. And they're really excited about it. You know, I related a lot to my best friend. He has this bit where every time we're driving down the road, he sees a skyscraper and, you know, he always hits me and it's like, hey, you know, I used to work over there. And, you know, it was annoying at first. He didn't understand he was doing it, but I can relate to it. And it's pretty funny because, you know, you get this sense of pride for what you've accomplished. And I feel like, you know, in the field, you really get that, but it doesn't really stop there. You know, it's with managers, it's with people in the office, you know, they're making the game plans and they're executing. And when it all goes well, they get that same sense of pride. So at Fawn, our mission is really to disrupt the software norm. And, you know, we're not just wanting to help one side. We want to help both the field and the office. And, you know, we can do that by not only increasing efficiency, but, you know, streamlining communication on and off the site. And, you know, the key to that is really our user-friendly design, one, and, you know, making sure that it's not adding on more work for either party.
Well, so Eddie was the one to kind of dig you up and talk to you. And so I came back through and actually was able to read this article that you put out on LinkedIn. It's called Construction Technology, The Reason Psychology is Holding You Back. And so if that was the main reason for getting you on the show today to talk about this article and maybe some of the points that you made, because, you know, we just really loved it and we thought a lot of people would benefit from it. So, you know, can you tell us briefly about the article and, you know, some of the kind of main ideas around it?
So I think it's best to start out with the why and then, you know, maybe progress from there.
Mm-hmm.
And in construction, we hear it all the time, right? It's supposedly behind the times, and we're on the podcast, so I guess, you know, the listeners can't see the air quotes I have with that, but, you know, construction really, you know, it is behind when it comes to technology, but it's not necessarily for the fact that the technology isn't there. It's really more of the adoption rates throughout the industry, and that's the reason it's scattered. So the purpose of the article was really to dive into, one, the psychology behind it, how it can affect their business, you know, how we can grow, not just from a company perspective, but also as an industry. So, you know, during the article, I dive into a lot of examples, and that's really more so for, you know, my understanding. It helps me learn, but it's also for the reader. So that, you know, maybe if they're reading it and they hear a scenario, they can sit back and think, how does it apply to our situation? So I guess, you know, the main points I go into are psychology a little bit. And then I also like to, or I went and digged into, you know, product fit and how much that matters, why it's important. If a company, you know, gets on to a platform, a software, a certain piece of technology, whatever it may be, and it's not the right fit, you know, they might not try technology again. And I'm sure you guys have heard it, and I'm probably going to butcher this saying, but have you ever heard a rising tide lifts all ships?
Yes. Love that one.
As technology grows and moves forward, it becomes more connected, and the industry needs to move forward together to make it happen. So I really wanted to sit down and, you know, write an article on what I'm seeing in the industry. And, you know, as a time to learn more about psychology, because I thought it was interesting.
I wanted to, like, before we move on, you said product fit. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, you see in the industry a lot that, you know, there's so many different construction technologies out there, whether it's software, you know, robots, AI, the scary stuff you see in the movies, whatever it may be. And, you know, a lot of companies are getting on to a certain technology just because they, you know, they might hear about it in a magazine, or they might hear about it from friends, but it might not be the best fit for their company. And it can really hold them back, because if they're just using technology just to say they're using it, it's not going to benefit them, right? And they're wasting time and money and, honestly, their people's efforts to try to implement something. But in the end, if it doesn't work, then it's not going to be good for the industry as a whole.
Well, I wanted to kind of shift over into one of the analogies that you use in the article, and that is the analogy of a racehorse. So how about describe that a little bit as an analogy, and you know, what can we learn from racehorses today? This sounds fun.
Of course. Well, I don't know too much about racehorses in general, but it's a fun thought experiment. So I use racehorses in the article mostly to reflect the mentality of a lot of businesses. And like I said, I really, you know, I dove into psychology more so because it was interesting to me. And then, you know, as I started reading, I got more interested and really tried to apply it to construction, right? Our business. And if you can imagine, let's say a racehorse would be your business. And generally in business, you know, external factors happen. And, you know, this could be an economic turn. It could be maybe your player joining your market, you know, just as some examples, but something that happens that's outside of their control. And, you know, I use the analogy because during a race, a horse, they're wearing blinders. And the reason that they're wearing blinders is to keep their focus on what's in front of them. You know, that's blocking out all external distractions. So they just, you know, they're racing, they're going for their goal. And if you can imagine your company as a racehorse, you know, you've spent years training and refining your techniques, your methods have worked so far. You know, you've won a few races along the way as you've gone, and, you know, you're getting prepared for the big race, right? Let's just say it's the Kentucky Derby, the big one. It's coming up. You're confident in it. You know, you're feeling yourself a little bit. You know that you're going to blow by it. But a few months before, the competition committee might, you know, call, and for some reason they're switching the track up. You know, it's raced on a dirt track, and for some reason this year they've decided to make it a turf track. I don't know why they did, but, you know, it's a thought experiment. Why not? So your horse, you know, you've only ever trained on dirt, and you have a couple of options. You know, are you going to stick to your normal training methods and hope for the best on race day. You know, the surface might have changed, but once you put on those blinders, you should be good to go. Or, you know, do you change your training method? Do you change your training ground? Are you going to prepare differently for this new surface? That way, when you actually put on those blinders, all the external circumstances have been accounted for, and then your horse is fully prepared and ready to go for whatever that's what. And these are just kind of the fun thought experiments that come up in psychology. You know, they differ from reality a little bit because, you know, when you get presented this type of option, generally people are going to pick number two, right? You're going to change your training. You're going to change what you do to be prepared. But, you know, that doesn't always happen in the business world around us, right? It's different for each circumstance, and you never know what's going to happen. But it's fun to think about stuff like that because you can apply it to your job then and apply it to your business.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here. I mean, I'm the kind of guy, let's say, and I'm...
Let's say.
I'm not really this way, but...
I already know where you're going with this.
Let's say
that.
That I kind of like sticking with what works. And I know that, you know, kind of what got me here is good. And I don't like change so much. So what would you say about that? Like, how could that ever get me in trouble? If I know it works and I stick here, how does that get me in trouble?
That is completely fair. And it's a great question. And obviously, you know, different circumstances happen, but, you know, generally, at least from a business perspective, you know, being stagnant can really, it can change the entire aspect of not only your company, but, you know, as the industry changes around you, and you see your competition changing, if you just stay and kind of do the same thing and you're not willing to change, you can go from whether you're the top dog or up there, you know, you can get past in the industry relatively quickly. And I'm not sure if you guys remember, and this might be, you know, a little further down the road, but do you guys remember back in the day when computers, this was a while ago, but they had like two pre-installed games on it. It was like chess and Minesweeper, I think, the two.
Yes.
And like you... Yeah, and you can play against the computer, and I mean, I was probably like 7 when I did it, so I wouldn't win against the computer that much, but if you put a professional up against it, I mean, they would win 10 times out of 10. It's sort of changed now, so there's actually a documentary. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it. I think it's on Netflix. This isn't a plug for Netflix, but I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix, and it sort of just completely takes that to a whole new level. So in 2016, and it's really interesting, if you guys haven't checked it out, but it's really interesting. So in 2016, there was this group, and they created this AI computer, right? It was called AlphaGo, and they taught it to play this game called Go, which is this old, you know, Chinese board game. I think it's like the oldest board game that is still around today and still actively played and taken really seriously. Like, if you are somewhat good at the game when you're young, you know, they'll take you out of school, right? And they, you know, all you do is you train to play this game. So it's intense. And, you know, they thought out in this documentary, they thought out to, you know, use this computer to try to beat, you know, the top dog, the best person at Go in the world. So the way that they could do it was they used machine learning, and, you know, just over time, it played against itself thousands and thousands of times a day. And eventually, you know, they recorded this documentary. It was a big event, and they brought in, his name is Lee Sedol, the best, right? He's supposedly the best in the world. He can beat pretty much anyone, you know, any day of the week. And they brought him in. They played 5 games, and this computer, this AI computer, ended up beating him 4 out of 5 times. And like I said, just playing against itself over and over, it was able to learn from its mistakes. It was able to learn new moves, you know, things that other people aren't doing. And I guess it's a long-winded answer to say, you know, learning from your mistakes is great, and you have to learn from your past, and you should constantly be doing that. But there's also times when you can do that as much as you want, but there's still going to be room for improvement because technology is there. You know, technology can do stuff that we can't always do. Sometimes it's not always experience and learning from it. Sometimes it's, you know, relying on the technology that's out there and really getting, you know, past that fear of, you know, I don't want to do it this way or I don't want to do it that way, and relying on some help.
Finding the things that will advance you and your mission, and constantly being on the lookout for those things. You know, you were talking a second ago about, you know, the Go player, and I immediately, because I'm a musician, I thought of this playoff that happened between Jimi Hendrix and Eric Clapton. And it's just kind of this old tale of, you know, Hendrix was the guitar hero, lack of a better word. He was the guitar hero of London, you know? Everybody was like, Clapton, he is the best. He is the best. So he's playing at this club down in a basement somewhere, and Jimi Hendrix shows up. Jimi Hendrix comes up and says, hey, I would really like to jam with Clapton. And so Clapton's like, yeah, sure, come on, man. Didn't really know much about Hendrix. Hendrix comes up and starts playing a rendition of Killing Floor that is so good that makes Eric Clapton walk off of the stage, light up a cigarette. He's shaking, trying to put it in his mouth, and he's just looking at his tour manager like, how is he so good? So there's always something or somebody that is going to be better than you. So I was thinking of that, you know, it's just that feeling of like, oh my gosh, they're just so much better than me. I imagine that Go player felt the same way.
right. Yeah. It's not always the best to think about it. You know, you try so hard to be the best at something, and if it's someone else or heck, a computer even mm-hmm. is better than you. Yeah. It can be frustrating.
It puts you in your place.
That's right. Yeah.
We think that just by maybe working harder, training harder, or something like that, we are going to stay ahead of the curve. It seems like you're an advocate for people when it comes to, maybe that's not enough. Maybe we need to be thoughtful about progression, because sometimes there are outside factors that just, they're unforeseen and maybe they're not fair. And we need to be able to cope with those outside factors and then make good decisions. And those good decisions for you, you're trying to outfit people and get them into the correct applications and softwares, correct?
Yeah, of course.
So getting into that, like, what are some of the first questions that we should ask ourselves as builders when we're trying to adopt new technology or new applications? You know, based off of some of the things that you wrote, I feel like there's a lot we could pull from it, but I would love to know, you know, what your starting point is for us.
Yeah, of course. And you know, some of that comes down, or I guess comes back to the psychology, right? Which is why I wrote the article in the first place and what I've been interested in. And, you know, when you dive a little bit further in, you start to really wonder, you know, why am I making these decisions? You know, what do I need to look for? What do I need to ask myself? Right. And, you know, I can't take credit for it. You know, it was actually first described by a man named Leon Festinger, and he was this just incredibly smart American social psychologist. And he described something that he called cognitive dissonance. And it normally occurs when a person holds contradictory beliefs about something. They'll typically experience stress, and especially when they like participate in something that goes against one of the beliefs that they already have. So I guess a little bit more is, according to his theory, you know, when two actions or ideas are not psychologically consistent, people will do everything and anything in their power to change them until they become consistent, right? So you want to, you know, have your feelings about everything kind of align and, you know, down the same path. And this discomfort is usually triggered by the person's belief clashing with new information that they, or, you know, new information that comes out, and it's not necessarily in line with what they already know. And it kind of freaks you out. You know, you think something or some way for so long, and it kind of becomes like the constant. And when new information comes, it's, you don't really know what to do with it. So basically they just try to find different ways to resolve this contradiction to reduce that discomfort. And there's generally a few ways that, you know, they're able to do this, you know, 2, 3, 4 different ways that you do it. And it's all depending on the person. In my article, specifically since it was obstruction technology, I made it about that and the, let's say a contractor's view or a thought process about technology, but it can be applied to everything. So I guess right now, heck, I have a box of donuts sitting right next to me. And let's say I wanted to say my goal was to lose some weight, right? So there's some different ways people process that, you know, information. Let's say donuts are bad for you, right? That's the norm. Everyone knows, you know, it's a lot of sugar, there's chocolate, you know, I should probably have some vegetables or something like that. So there's different ways people actually go about changing their behavior. And I think that's how it applies the most, right? You can either change your behavior. Say, I'm not going to eat these donuts right next to me. They're bad for me. It's going to make me gain weight. You can justify the behavior by changing the conflicting cognition. And this would be something like, you know, I'm not going to eat donuts during the week, but I'll have a cheat day here, right? And, you know, maybe one day a week. And then you can, you know, there's the other side of the spectrum where you can just blatantly ignore the information that comes to you, right? The new information, you know, I could say, I'm going to eat as many of these donuts as I want, and, you know, I'm not going to gain a pound. Screw it. And that's the thought process that goes on, you know? It's, you're constantly trying to figure out what is the best path to take through the information you have and your beliefs from before.
Probably the best path that you could take right now, Nate, is to take the donuts off of your desk and eat them. Actually, no, I'm just kidding.
And eat them. I'll open it right now.
Pass one through the screen, please. No.
That's right.
Yeah, we need Wonka vision. Oh, man, we need Wonka vision.
You've put yourself squarely in the denial column.
Yeah, I have. Denial.
Oh, yeah.
I will eat these and not gain weight. Exactly. That is what I choose to believe.
Exactly. These are delicious. I think there's probably some architecture that you can take into account. And one of the things that I've been learning, I've been using this app Noom to, you know, just help me kind of keep my weight in check and learn some new things about food and how I handle things. And one of the things that they teach you as a psych trick is make sure that you take into account the way that your room and the things around you are laid out. You think about this, right? If I always keep donuts on the counter, the odds of me eating donuts goes up a lot. Right? So if I keep an apple on the counter, the odds of me eating an apple goes up. So if you want to make changes, you need to also adjust your physical space or even your virtual one too. If you're spending too much time on Facebook, delete the Facebook app. You know, pick up a book instead. You know, I think there's a lot of architecture that goes into this. And something to remember, I think with picking out applications, with finding new software solutions and everything, you know, you're the architect of your company, of your day. You're laying things out so that you can be successful.
Well, I like what, Nate, you said earlier, and that was picking an application just because you saw somebody else have it.
Don't we because, do that?
Yeah, I saw it in a magazine. Is probably not the best way to pair a software to your actual needs.
Hold up. Wait. You're reading magazines still?
He said magazines, not me.
Well, I think that's something people do though. You know, they see somebody using the new shiny thing and they have to have it. And man, we have shiny object syndrome so bad. And it's not just in our industry, it's in others too. I see it, you know, throughout, like everybody's got to get a new truck. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
Nate, is it fair to say, I mean, there's certainly some shiny object syndrome going, but what about just the side of, I don't know what to do, so I'll just look around, see what everybody else is doing, and I'll do that. Not giving much thought to how we're architecting, thank you, Tyler, our processes and the applications that we use.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. So it's, you know, during the journey, you're going to have to, you know, it's a constant renewal process, right? You're going to have to see what's working and what's not. And it's always best to really get an advisor through it. And that, just because I say advisor doesn't mean I, you know, go out and spend money on someone who tells you what to use. But, you know, I talk about technology a lot and how it can help a company grow and, you know, mitigate risk, you know, whatever it may be, but action alone during that will likely do more harm than good. And, you know, the question shouldn't be throughout this process, what should we do? Right. It's not, hey, what do we need to do next? It's, you know, the question really should really be what's holding us back. And when you have a good business model, you've seen some initial success. You don't want to just uproot everything and change four strategic initiatives. You know, that's what got you there in the first place. That's why you're having that success. You just need to take a step back really and find a solution to the obstacles that are holding you back. Rushing to change everything isn't the answer. Far too often, you know, you'll see a company take it from one extreme to the next where, you know, they're going to shake up everything that they've had before, their processes, their relationships, and, you know, it can really ruin them if they just jump in head first. You know, we're going to do it just because. And construction technology is the exact same way. That it's no different. And kind of like I was saying, it's going to be a rolling process of renewal that you have to implement as your business grows and adapts and, you know, to the environment around you. Often a good place in construction is a construction software, a construction app, but you really can't fall into the what should we do, air quotes, what should we do trap. You know, finding the right fit for your company is going to be vital. And, you know, if you have that trusted advisor or a good friend that's done it before and understands your needs, you know, that's going to give you that much more of a chance to have success implementing that software. So just make sure that you actually understand what your business needs. And if you do that and you find the right fit, then you really can just transform your business into, you know, whatever you want to make it.
I feel like that, you know, segues perfectly into our megaphone question. So, you know, if you could kind of condense what you just said, and we gave you a megaphone that the whole industry could hear, you know, for 60 seconds, you know, what would you tell them, man?
Yeah, of course. And you know, part of it, one, obviously, come take a look at Fawn. But two, you know, make sure you take a step and really know what you want, you know, out of your technology when you're adopting it. Make sure you're finding the right fit. Make sure you're talking to the right people, and make sure you're looking at it from, you know, the ground up. Is it helping the top just as much as helping the bottom? You know, the guys in the field, or, you know, everyone in between. Just make sure you understand completely what your business needs. And if you know that, then you can find and perfect a perfect technology that will allow your business to have success for the years to come.
Heck yeah, man. Well, where can people look you up, Nate?
Yeah, of course. They used to get all the information. Our website is fawn.io. You can come check out. Obviously, we have a blog post, whatever it may be. You can come get some more information on what we do. And then, obviously, I'm on LinkedIn, which is where we found each other. So if you want to search me on LinkedIn, it's just Nate Clark.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you guys for having me.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us today. I wanted to take a second and point you at a couple things before you go. Number one, make sure that you go check out our website. It is www.brospodcast.com. We're constantly posting new blog updates on there and thoughts of things that we're seeing in the industry. And then also make sure while you're there, go check us out on social media. We are on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. We're constantly asking questions there, trying to get people involved and engaged and learn more about what's happening in the industry so we can keep bringing stuff to you that's relevant. And also share it with somebody. If there's something in here that you thought was valuable, forward it over to your friend. Let them know about the show. Again, that's going to help us out a lot. And finally, please leave a review. If you found this interesting or helpful at all, you could help us out in a big way by just hitting a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. So thank you so much for joining us this week. Have a good one.